the blue light.
It's the mile we're on.
Well, welcome everybody to the first Senate Committee on Business and Transportation meeting of the 2014 session. We've got three bills up today, both all listed for public hearing and work session. Doesn't necessarily mean we're going to work session them, but we're going to listen and see what we have to say. We're going to start off first with adoption of the committee rules. Colleagues, these are the same rules you've seen before. The only addition is the one that I think you're aware of, that any amendment must be posted at least an hour before it's acted on. So with that, the chair moves adoption of the committee rules as presented. Oops. Oh, gotta wait.
Yeah, why don't we stand at ease for a moment?
Stand at ease.
IT strikes again.
Now. We have to wait for the recorder.
Did the rules give me veto power?
Huh?
Did the rules give me veto power?
I'm sure they do.
Oh, okay. So then I'm
of course. But primarily only in your mind.
That's never stopped me before.
just like always, it won't work.
A legend in my own mind.
I'm prepared to do a small song and dance if you'd like. While you wait.
We're still waiting.
Is that a motivation?
Get us there.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that's a motivation to the technical staff.
Exactly. Just want to make sure we're meeting our constitutional requirements. Record while it's recorded during the test period.
First day startup problems.
We'd be happy to say something. Is it coming through?
Yes,
please. Sounds like it is.
We're at ease.
We are at ease. Okay. We're just sitting at ease.
It's recording, though, right?
We did a test before it started, and it was working, and now we're doing a test.
So one day you got the whole gang here.
Yeah. Uh-oh. both been posted?
Oh, yeah, yeah, 2 hours, more than 2 hours ago. So we more than made that. But the real constraint, like I said, is always going to be discount revenue offices need to be able to analyze.
Today, it's a real one that's going to be the endorsement process.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a quick turnaround, I think, so.
You think?
Well,
it's a mechanical issue.
Yeah.
Making sure they got all the right amendments into the bill and printed.
Yeah. It's much faster. Yeah, we're good? Okay.
We're good to go?
Yeah.
Well, we lost Senator Starr, but we'll go ahead anyway.
I think so.
Okay, we'll come back in session, and apparently we got it up. Do we need to redo the motion on the rules?
Probably is worth redoing the motion, Mr. Chair.
All righty. Since we didn't get it on the record, we'll redo the motion on the rules. So the chair moves adoption of the rules, committee rules, as presented. Any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? So ordered. Rules are adopted. Now we'll move on to the first bill. Patrick, Senate Bill 1537.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1537 specifies that a mutual pool for live or previously held horse races may include unclaimed amounts carried forward from the mutual pool of previous races. It authorized the Oregon Racing Commission to adopt rules to identify forms of mutual wagering that race meet licensees may offer. It provides that devices used by race meet licensees to offer mutual wagering in accordance with the Commission rules are not considered slot machines or gray machines. We have also received two amendments. The First Amendment, I believe Mr. Dewey will speak to. The Second Amendment is a technical amendment that was discovered that he may also be able to speak to as well. So we have two separate amendments for this bill, Mr. Chair. We do not have the paperwork at this point for either of those amendments to move the bill.
Thank you, Patrick. Colleagues, you'll recall this is a bill that we passed during the last session. I think it went with no opposition or controversy. Unfortunately, afterwards, the Attorney General's office decided that they need a technical clarification in language, so that's what we're going to be dealing with. And I will note that we do not have, at this point, the revenue. It's just the revenue for the Dash 2, so we won't be able to move it until we get that. Hopefully, we might get that by the end of the day.
They're in progress.
They're in progress. All righty. So we'll start off then with Mr. Dewey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on behalf of Portland Meadows, Mike Dewey, thank you for hearing this bill. We appreciate it. I will be very brief. I'm sure you're going to hear this on other bills. This is a technical amendment, and it really is. This bill passed for this is historical racing. It came out of the Senate. 30 to zip, signed by the governor, Chapter 257. And in discussions with the Attorney General's office, we appreciated their input. And the Racing Commission, in part when Portland Meadows was working to adopt rules to allow for historical racing, we found that there was a conflict with the statute involving wagering pools. Mutual wagering pools, and the way the statute is set up today under the term mutual in the definitions and then a little bit later in the statute wagering pools, you could read the statute so that a pool cannot carry over. And for historical races, it is designed, if there are not winners, to have the pool carry over. So in essence, in the discussions with the Department of Justice and the Racing Commission, we really couldn't implement the mutual game as intended. So the First Amendment is designed to clarify that wagering pools in certain circumstances can carry over. And quite frankly, it's good we caught this because this catches us up with some of the other types of wagers that occur at a track. So that is what the First Amendment would do. The Second Amendment, we used a term to define the types of wagers, and we used the term unclaimed wagers. And that's defined somewhere in the statute. What actually means tickets that have been unclaimed but are winning tickets. Mm. And so we said unclaimed, and we are taking out in the amendment the word unclaimed in one of the sections and to the extent unclaimed in the other. Because otherwise, these are pools that there is not a winner, therefore they carry over. And unclaimed tickets are winning tickets that have not been claimed and may cheat to the state. So that is what the bill does. If this were to pass, and we hope it does, then Portland Meadows, the Racing Commission, and the Executive Department will discuss the implementation of how this will work in real life.
We got it.
So with Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions. I know there's some others, you've asked me to be very brief about this particular discussion, in that it's a technical amendment.
Okay. Questions of Mike?
Looks like a technical fix.
I'll have it before the rest of the people.
That's why we're here for this short session.
Yes, that's what I was just going to say. What he was saying down there, isn't this why we're here for 35 days
technical
to fix
fixes. I've got some other bills later
that we do a little tweak.
Errors like that were pointed out by people who should have caught them before we did it. anyway, thank you, Mike.
Thank you for your time.
And I have three other people who wish to testify on this. I think it's Nick Lowell, Dave Nelson, and Glennell Smith. You want to all come up together? Welcome. Good to see you again, Dave.
Mr. Chairman, it's good to see you and all the rest of you. I think you gave my testimony. Again, my name is David Nelson. I'm a horse racer from Turner, Oregon. Spent too many years down here. You gave my testimony when you introduced the bill, so I'll just say we're all for it, and that's all that needs to be said.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, right. Say me too.
Yeah, same with me. I'm Nick Lowell. That's spelled L-O-W-E. I'm a vice president for the OHBBA, and I also testified for the bill in the previous session.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, Senators. I'm Linnell Smith. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association. On behalf of our Board of Directors and our members, we wish to state our complete support for Senate Bill 1537, and we sincerely appreciate this committee's commitment to saving horse racing in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. Well, I'm told we now have the fiscal on these, so...
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Huh?
Thank you.
I think we have to adopt both of the...
Yes, on OLIS you'll find, we just posted the -1 revenue impact statement and the -2 revenue impact statement. The fiscal impact statements, there is no fiscal impact for either of the two amendments. The -1 amendment has a little bit of description, so we're trying to print it out for you. I can read it if you like. It's available on OLIS. It essentially describes some impact to the unclaimed winnings account to the Oregon Racing Commission as a result of the -1 amendment. The -2 amendment has a minimal revenue impact statement.
Okay, so what's the amount of the -1?
The -1 for 2013-2015, it's $320,000. For 2015-2017, it's $330,000. 2017-2019, it's $340,000.
Questions on this, Patrick, before we move on? All right, we have two amendments that I think we need to consider. The first is the... we are in, well, let me make sure. We'll open a work session on 1537. I think I just opened the hearing. Thank you. Can I start? You want
to? Yeah, I move the -1 and -2 amendments to Senate Bill 1537.
Can we do that all in one vote?
Yep.
We can.
I don't know why not.
It probably would be good if we did them separately, Mr. Chairman.
I move the -1 amendments.
We're getting too efficient. All right. So Senator Starrs moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 1537. Discussion on that motion. Opposition to that motion? There is none. They are adopted. Senator Starr?
Chair, I move the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 1537.
Senator Starr has moved the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 1537. Discussion on the motion. Opposition to the motion? Seeing none, they are so ordered. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 1537 as amended by the dash 1 and dash 2 amendments. Discussion on that motion. Discussion? Senator Monroe.
Mr. Chair, I would like to declare a possible potential conflict of interest. My daughter-in-law is the chief financial officer at Portland Meadows.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, so we have a motion on the floor. Is there any opposition to the motion? The motion is passed. Senate Bill 1537, as amended, is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Monroe, did you?
No.
No, you don't. Senator.
I'll carry it.
Senator Girod will carry the bill. Thank you, Senator. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1537, and we'll open the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1557.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1557 specifies when a vehicle dealer has received certificate of title from another or other primary ownership document for purposes of the offense of failure to provide a clear title. The measure narrows the scope of the exception to the offense of failure to provide a clear title, and the measure declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage and signature by the governor. We have received no amendments for this measure, and we have received a statement of no fiscal impact and a statement of no revenue impact. So we have all paperwork in hand, Mr. Chair.
All righty. So I have one person signed up, Jerry Hinton. And we did talk about this in our last interim committee meeting briefly.
Yes, sir. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be with you again. Yes, we went over the bill at the interim hearing just a few weeks ago. So my comments will be brief. It's apologize in advance. It certainly is not as interesting as horse racing or liquor. So we'll get through this. Thank you. Again, my name is Jerry Hinton. I represent Brazier's Portland Auto Auction, but really today all of the auto industry in the state of Oregon. The bill simply fixes a 2011 Court of Appeals decision that skewed the original interpretation of the statute and takes back the law to the original legislative intent. It's simply a technical correction, and in short, the result of the minor technical corrections of the statute are that they clarify that the 2003 exception to the 15-day payment rule that was intended to only apply to the traditional flooring agreements with manufacturers and financial institutions does not apply to the transactions between licensed dealers. It also clarifies that the dealer delivering clear title is a dealer that is protected. It also clarifies that the date of which the 15-day payment rule begins to run, and it provides a means for transferring dealers to safeguard paper titles and cooperate with the DOT without losing protection of the statute.
Sorry.
It is widely supported by the auto industry in Oregon, and as you've just indicated, the fiscal impact is zero as per DMV. And I'd be happy to entertain any questions that the committee might have.
Okay, questions? I don't see any, and Patrick has informed us their fiscal and revenue impact statements are on the computer system, and there is no impact. Anybody else? I just wanted to check. So Jerry's the only one we had. You're done?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're done. So we will open the works. I think I did have a work session open. So. Senator.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1557 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr's moved Senate Bill 1557 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, Senate Bill 1557 is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier, Senator Monroe wants to carry. So we'll close on that, and we'll now turn to the main event. Or at least one we'll get the most testimony on. We'll open a public hearing, and probably just a public hearing on 1559. And Patrick.
Ready for me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1559 allows qualifying off-premises sales licensees to obtain an endorsement authorizing the sale of distilled liquor at licensed premises. It authorizes OLCC to adopt rules for the sale of distilled liquor by off-premises sales licensees. It provides timeline for implementation of the program. It directs the commission to establish distilled liquor endorsement fee for the issuance of off-premises sales licensees and specifies the purpose to which the money so collected may be used. It directs the commission to establish uniform wholesale and minimum retail prices for distilled liquor. It authorizes retail sales agents and off-premises sales licensees to establish retail prices for distilled liquor sold at their stores. It specifies that only retail sales agents may sell liquor on full on-premises sales to full on-premises sales licensees. It authorizes the inclusion of specified provisions and agreements between the commission and retail sales agents and specifies the date of application of the measures provision and date for modification or termination of agreements. It directs the commission to report to the Legislative Assembly by September 1st, 2015 and has an emergency clause. We also have provided in your packets four amendments. The first two amendments are functionally similar. They copy the most of the portions of the bill. The First Amendment specifies that the commission establishes retail prices for liquor products. The second specifies that off-premises sales licensees may establish their retail liquor prices. The Dash 3 Amendment makes a few technical changes, including specifying that off-premise licensees and retail sales agents may not possess an exclusive right to sell a particular brand, size, or type of liquor. It allows the commission to adopt rules to allow on-premises sales licensees to purchase their liquor from another source if it is unable to conveniently purchase liquor from a liquor store. The Dash 3s also allow off-premises sales licensees to sell distilled liquor in factory sealed containers smaller than 750 milliliters with written permission from the commission, and it changes the operative dates of several portions of the measure. That's the Dash 3s. And the Dash 4s replace the entire measure and create a task force to study the issue further.
Thank you, Patrick. Colleagues, I'll remind that we did hear this during the interim jointly with the House Committee. The proposal that's in front of us was one that I requested the OLCC to prepare in response to, obviously, there's a initiative process that's out there that would totally deregulate the industry, and I thought it was important that there at least be a legislative hearing on that so we could air the issue. I asked that they prepare a middle ground proposal, and there's the initial one as well as some middle ones. It'll really be, we're going to listen today, and then we'll decide after that whether we're going to act at a later date. But I thought it was important that at least we had the opportunity to air the issue well and hear the different perspectives on it. You'll remember or recall that Washington State went through this issue a couple years ago now, and it passed an initiative there. So I think this is very similar to that, and it's an important public policy that at least the legislature consider it. With that, we have a list of people, starting out with the chair.
Morning, Chair Beyer, members.
Welcome.
Of the committee. For the record, I'm Rob Patridge. I'm the chair of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'm joined today by Steve Marks, our executive director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Thanks for having us again. I don't know where we're at on our PowerPoint, but I'm happy to be here today, and I certainly appreciate Chair Beyer bringing this issue to the forefront. It certainly is, there's certainly a question out there, and the grocers would not have brought the initiatives that radically change the way we do business here in Oregon based upon the initiatives that have been filed, as well as the fact that we now face, I believe, as the chair of the OLCC and a fairly new member of the OLCC within the last little over a year, that we need to do something in Oregon, because the issue has come, and we had six meetings, as I told you before, related to retail innovations. The conclusion that came unanimously out of that very diverse group was that we either need to invest in our current system or we need to modify the system. And so that's the question, and I think that that's the question that Senator Beyer is or Chair Beyer is bringing before the group. I think the fundamental question that that you have to ask yourself as legislators is, one, is there an access issue that exists out there? And I think that that's the very fundamental question that you have to address, whether that be in a grocery store, more liquor stores, change the location of the current liquor stores or whatever. Is there an access issue that is out there or perceived to be out there? And then secondarily to that, if you answer that in the affirmative, then what do you do to fix it? I think that as you hear testimony related to this particular piece of legislation, and it certainly is a discussion draft, and there are several pieces of amendments that would need to be done, I think, ultimately to get it there, that you have to ask then, and I would encourage you to ask the people who testified before you today, one, if they believe there's an access issue, and two, if they do, then what would be their proposal to fix it based upon their perspective. We certainly have a diverse group of perspectives and over $1 billion in gross sales coming to the state of Oregon. So somebody's ox gets gored if we expand anything either at the OLCC and we continue to draw more circles around liquor stores, or if we expand the licensing, which is the hybrid model where we take what we believe, or what I believe is the best of the current system, and try and preserve those things like craft distilling, and try and preserve the opportunity for agents to succeed successfully by diversifying what their inventory and things are. So with that, we'll kind of dive into what we've got here. So in meeting the challenges for this legislation, we appreciate the interest of the group. As I said, we met 6 times with the Retail Innovations Group, representing every single facet of liquor in the state of Oregon. We recommended to invest in the current system or modify it. As I've said, there's no consensus on what the modification should be, and like I said, I would encourage you to ask that of people who testify so that you get a sense, as people who don't have an invested interest necessarily in knowing the liquor system. Obviously, we met with Senator Beyer to discuss this hybrid model, and it's tough to make some decisions on a closed system like we have today. We built upon a variety of the hybrid concepts, 2 particular hybrid models, one by the distillers, the craft distillers, and another model put forth by some of the agents. But some of those components are not in what we presented, because it wasn't balanced. We do believe that we do have an effective system today. We do believe, though, that we need to invest or modify some of that in order to maximize revenue for the state and better serve the citizens of the state of Oregon in terms of access. But we do want to preserve its values. We think it has much value to especially the development in the future of craft distilling. Oops, I'm going the wrong way. So the values of today's system are statewide access. We have 248 liquor stores around the state of Oregon. Anybody in any community with those 248 liquor stores can get any of the variety of products that are on the shelves there. So consequently, we have an extremely wide selection. We have uniform pricing throughout the state. So if you're in Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, or in Portland, you get the same price for the same bottle of alcohol no matter where you're at in the state. That has a lot of appeal. We're innovative in terms of what we do and in terms of our support of Oregon's craft distilling industry. We are small business focused in what we do today because these are 248 small businesses.
Senator Starr.
I apologize for interrupting, but I had a conversation with some folks about this, and the question that I have is related to the Oregon small distillers.
Mm-hmm.
Can any product that's distilled or made in Oregon, does it automatically find its way to the liquor store shelves in Oregon?
It does not today. They have to apply for a listing in Oregon today. There's federal laws that we've got to treat everybody fairly, and so consequently they apply for that, and then if it is listed as a listed product that we put into the system, then they can get it at any liquor store in the state. Any liquor store in the state can order that particular bottle of alcohol. And so consequently, then we also have split cases so they can order, you know, small quantities of liquor, and we believe that supports small business here in Oregon. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, it is. Just a quick follow-up. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult to get on the list then?
I haven't heard any complaints after being the chair for a few months. I've only had one issue related to complaints.
So the question is have you ever had one turned down?
Yeah,
I can't answer that.
No.
Thank you.
We're getting the nod from the back.
Not
no.
Too much trouble.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem. And the other piece, the value of today's system, which is radically different from the initiatives that are presented, is that I believe we have a stable, consistent revenue generation. It comes into a state bailment warehouse. It leaves the state bailment warehouse. We know what's going on in the stores. It gets sold, and the state collects the revenue. It's a pretty effective system. There's not leakage. There's not, with 248 stores and very tight auditing and systems control, we're able to really effectively collect that revenue for the state of Oregon.
Let me ask you a question about that, because you raised it. In terms of collecting the state revenue, contrasted with the initiative where it would be a tax, right now all of your auditing is within the state of Oregon.
Correct.
If we change to, say, the Washington kind of model, you would then have to go out and audit the manufacturers or distributors out of state?
I believe that we would, based upon my understanding of the initiative. Today we don't have to worry about doing that. It all gets to be in-state travel. We're not sending people out of state or out of country to talk with manufacturers.
So to do it the other way would increase your costs?
I believe it would substantially increase our costs there, and I believe that trying to chase down, from what I can tell from my reading of the initiative as the chair, the set of initiatives, is that we would be chasing down what the pricing of that was. Now we have uniform pricing. It goes out the door, and we collect the
So I'm thinking the model that seems to be the clearest or closest to that would be motor vehicles, where they have to go out and audit the carriers out of state to see if they're reporting their numbers correctly or not.
I think so, to some degree, yes.
Not an inexpensive proposition.
It is not. Again, we have 248 retail liquor stores, over 1,000 privately employed by those liquor stores. We have 148 exclusive stores, which means they just sell liquor. As I told the committee before, though, the OLCC has opened the door to allow any store in the state to apply to sell beer and wine and other ancillary products, so they can be more like a convenience store, but it's limited to those 248 stores. Today, we have 100 non-exclusive stores, and today, Oregon products are available in every single store in the state. If you want to know where your liquor stores are, there's the 248 stores in the state of Oregon. We have distillery retail liquor agents. There are 33 distillery agents at 44 separate contracted locations. There are 19 new distillery agents since 2011, and they're able to sell their own products by the bottle from their tasting room and at special events. We believe there's a lot of new market opportunity to grow that small business segment here in Oregon. We're seeing, we're number one in the nation in craft distilling. You can't do like wine and beer and do it in your own garage. We can't have bathtub gin going on, so there's a lot more regulatory issues. And unlike the marijuana measures going down talking about 100 feet down the hall, the access issues are not, whether it's in your bedroom or your bathroom or your backyard. So.
I think he's giving us his other job perspective as a district attorney.
You can see that Oregon distillers are distributed a lot on the I-5 corridor, but they are distributed throughout the state of Oregon. We're in charge of listing the products available to the public, as we discussed based on Senator Starr's question. As we said, of the thousands of items we have, there are 400 Oregon products available. They account for 12% of all liquor sales revenue and 16% of the volume sold. Again, 55 Oregon distilleries. And we offer, because of the way we custom ship or have individual boxing or split cases, we're able to distribute those effectively throughout the state of Oregon. And we believe that that creates a level playing field for our small producers, not only from Oregon, but other areas of the country and other areas of the world. We do have room for improvement. Our primary issues, we believe, at the OLCC are customer convenience, accessibility, and then the investment that needs to get made into the system. We're looking, as we present to you this upcoming legislative session, if we continue along our growth path, we will probably outstrip the ability of to ship the liquor, even with under our current system, out of our current warehouse without some form of modernization. So we will be coming to legislature with some policy option packages to support that if the legislature chooses to do nothing at all. So Our stores are open on weekends and evenings, but their hours may not be convenient for customers at times. We don't have a uniform group on weekend hours. There may not be a store nearby, and we hear that if you attended a Super Bowl party, if people found out at the Super Bowl party I was at that I was the OLCC chair, they asked me, well, when am I going to be able to get it in a more convenient manner? So it was an interesting thing.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, what he's telling you is that you can't buy booze at 8 o'clock on Sunday morning on your way to church.
Well, that may not be true in all locations. The hours thing is really up to the agent, isn't it?
Part of it is up to the agent, yeah. And then lack of incentives for investment by agents. We really don't have a lot of tools in our toolbox to incentivize them at this point. Our goals of this legislation were to protect the good values of the existing system, maintain and grow state revenue, protect and foster development of the distilled spirits industry, provide variety throughout the state, and increase access by keeping prices stable. So we moved from the retail innovation piece to try and incorporate some of those pieces into this legislation. Again, it was about preserving the values of the statewide structure of the existing system while expanding access to customers. The concerns were with wide open access. We restricted it to 10,000 square feet or larger, were some public safety concerns that were expressed by many people, and concern about small stores on every single street corner, more like a California model. The result is we tried to draw the line in Senate Bill 1559 to provide access with stores 10,000 square feet or greater. So that's how we came up with the particular model and particular way to draw that line. There are a variety of ways to do that, but there are over 4,000 off-premises retail locations currently. So this would take 660 of that 4,000. So if we were really to turn on the pipe and open up it to 4,000 stores, that would mean anywhere you could buy beer and wine today. And that's not the model we chose. We chose a moderate step in between that. I'll turn it over to Steve Marks.
Before you move off the size, one of the concerns that was raised during legislative days by some of the people who represent rural areas is that they're saying, well, we don't have 10,000 square foot stores.
Mm-hmm.
But my sense is, based on the map he had, is that those stores that are there would still exist, or could still exist, and you're a store within a store model. I'm thinking of the store in my district in Brownsville or Blue River, mm-hmm. both of which are very small in a small rural store. So mm-hmm. those would still have the potential to exist.
Absolutely. All the stores in Oregon would exist. The big advantage to the retail agents that we have today is that these agents, these 248 agents in our stores in Oregon today, have $22 million worth of taxpayer dollars. And that means that we're flooring $22 million worth of alcohol, the state of Oregon is, to those 248 stores. If you look at it, there are not many places where you can get your supplier to provide your flooring. So all you're paying for basically is your walls, your lights, any advertising, and your labor costs. So we are flooring that inventory today. I think if you go out, and also we've now liberalized our rules at the OLCC to allow for and to innovate to allow for it to be a non-exclusive store. They can sell beer and wine if they make application. They can sell chips. They can sell other ancillary items. If you want the OLCC to go out and create more of those kinds of stores, then that could be a direction that this committee could take. However, I'm not sure that it's good. Every time we go out and try and draw circles, we get opposition. We create less than two additional stores every legislative session. But I'll tell you, we get calls from legislators that they're encroaching on our area, or they're, you know, they're putting a store next to our store. So you could continue to ask the OLCC to continue to draw circles if you think there's an access issue, or you could open it up to some of the market forces and leave these 248 stores that we still continue to floor to provide the variety of liquor that's available in the market today and provide customer convenience. I think if you went to any liquor store in Oregon today, and you could probably throw a rock and hit some type of convenience store that is located near that liquor store. These liquor stores have the ability to basically become a type of convenience store now with making it a non-exclusive store. We don't want to get into a whole bunch of extra competition with a lot of the other convenience markets either. We've got the 248 stores. What we're trying to offer you is the best of the current system that allows variety and access, especially in rural Oregon, and puts a variety of Oregon products on the shelf, and at the same time trying to solve the access problem without OLCC sitting in an ivory tower trying to draw more circles, and you guys listening to a continued debate as to whether it's too close to the store that they open. That's the difference in this model.
There was some discussion during legislative days or concern expressed that it would have a big impact on rural Oregon. My just observation would be, I think that probably the other is true, probably it'd have little impact on rural areas, but a big impact potential on urban areas where there's more possibilities of competition.
Chair Beyer, I believe that you're correct. A lot of our non-exclusive stores that are out there already, liquor is a line item in their business next to their other types of things that they supply in those rural areas. As the representative from the 2nd Congressional District, which covers the majority of rural Oregon, you know, that's what a lot of those stores cover. And I think that there will frankly be more competition in urban areas where you have a liquor store maybe today located next to a major retail grocer.
Mm-hmm. Senator Jerome.
Yeah, I have a question on the proposed model, and that is, we've talked a lot about Oregon products and how sometimes it's just one bottle at a time, or especially in liquor stores. But on the new model with the licensees over 10,000 square feet, we're having minimum order standards. And so it seems to be a little bit in conflict with trying to promote Oregon products. And I thought I'd give you a chance to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I believe that we do have an amendment on that. I think that was something that we need to continue to promote, is that split casing to some degree at the, you know, at the retail grocery level, so that we can promote Oregon products and we can move large distilleries. Some Oregon distilleries don't even produce 600 cases of alcohol, and so that is something that we need to do.
Move back a little bit.
Sorry,
Mike.
Follow up,
please.
In the second one, and my dad had a grocery store, and so I kind of understand this. There's a little bit of pushback, too, on paying cash at the time of purchase. That's really inconvenient. Is there any consideration on maybe, get them 30 days to pay the invoice, or 2 weeks, or something like that?
Again, I think that's a legislative and fiscal decision that that the body can make. Certainly, we certainly don't. We floor it for the current agents today, but it would be just like beer and wine. They seem to be able to pay for beer and wine in a cash measure, and the legislature hasn't moved on that issue for 80 years. So,
not that we haven't talked about
not
it.
Not that it hasn't been discussed.
The original federal prohibition.
That testimony may be better addressed by somebody else who might testify related to this matter, who maybe happened to be first on the agenda.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Senator Kierbeyer, has your agency done any guesswork on will this raise the cost to the consumers? And estimates, if you have any?
Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, this measure contemplates that we would have minimum pricing that was offered by the state. Certainly there are people that are interested also in amendments in this, that it would be same statewide pricing. So I think the issue is open. The way it was set up originally was there was a lot of concern from the agents that that they are not getting enough compensation to keep their businesses running. And if we keep the current model, that may very well be true. And the agents have come for many, many years in a row, the legislature asked for additional compensation, and the legislature has chosen not to grant that. We believe that with the current model, if the bill is taken as it is, there certainly could be some price increases in various areas, because it would be more market pricing above the minimum pricing. So certainly there could be. But we're not putting any additional, layering additional taxes and other things on it that the state of Washington did. So I don't think you're going to see the same.
What's the average compensation now?
8.8%. But we also pay for credit card fees. And so that's, Steve has some slides that we still have up here that can go through pieces, a few pieces of that as well. And if you're ready, we'll.
And Senator Thompson, just to you, one of the amendments that, or actually two of the amendments that I asked to be drafted, I think are there, would have treated that issue. One would have split it and kept the current model for agents with that designation, and would have OLCC maintaining pricing for that. The other one, and allowed the new licensees to set their own prices above a minimum. The third one would just keep OLCC in the business is setting prices as it does today. So there are options. The intent was to make sure that as we discuss this that we had options available. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director of OLCC. So my job is to go through some of the components of the bill specifically and how they apply to different parts of our business. The first is that the general principles of OSCC sets the minimum retail price. We continue to floor liquor for agent stores. We allow the grocers 10,000 square feet to sell distilled liquor. Grocers will pay with cash for that distilled spirit, and both agents and grocers can charge higher prices than the minimum retail price. So if you look at the next slide, we're contrasting with these bottles our current system and the system contemplated by Senate Bill 1559. First of all, let me say, and not mistake this, the way implementation is contemplated, it would generate the same amount of revenue for the state and for counties and cities. So if you look at the current system, you see our manufacturing costs on the bottom, our expenses, the compensation in the red there that we pay to our liquor stores, that's the 8.8% on average, and then the profit. When we flip that to a pricing model, we'd have the manufacturer's cost, slightly reduced OLCC operating expenses, and you'll see that on the next slide. The profit for cities, state, and counties would remain the same. You'd have the minimum retail markup, and that then minimum retail price would apply to both our agent stores and to the grocers. So in the next slide, it breaks down a little further the components of what's the state's wholesale price. So you can see through the manufacturer's cost up to the green block, our profit for the state, that would be the composition of the state wholesale price. Above that is the profit for retailers, the retail minimum markup. And then you can see the costs that are put in that. That, to be revenue neutral, that markup would be 12.6% overall. So we move into that compensation as it exists today, that 8.8%. Then what we pay today, credit card fees, agent supplies, and some license and the licensee discount for bar services. So those are built into that idea of a 12.6% implementation to make it revenue neutral. On the next slide, how it would apply to retail sales agents, allows the retail sales agent to set the price. They wouldn't allow to be able to discount that price, but they could charge higher prices. OLCC would continue to floor all of their inventory. When sold, the agent would pay the state its state wholesale price. That's a reverse. We pay them compensation. We pay to them today, so they would pay us when they made the sales. Revenues for agents would be the difference between the state wholesale price for the distilled spirit and the retail price sold at the store. It would authorize provisions in our new contract agreements to negotiate for customer convenience and experience for investments in the business. It would authorize provisions in the agreement to promote and carry Oregon products and display them market.
Steve, to be clear, for the agents, OLCC under this model would continue to floor the product?
Yes. For the grocers, would allow grocers approximately 650 of them of 10,000 square feet to get an endorsement on their existing beer and wine licenses to sell distilled spirits and to set the prices for those spirits. It would not allow discounting below the minimum price, and that was a primary concern about levelizing the market between folks. We didn't want one side to be able to provide deep discounting. It allows OLCC to sell distilled spirits to the grocers at the state wholesale price, and that's cash on delivery. Revenues for the grocers would be the difference between the state wholesale price and the price they sell it for in the store. OLCC would set the minimum order requirements and requirements for purchases that was set at 750 milliliters. Within the bill, we have an amendment that would allow OLCC to approve smaller containers. And it would allow the OLCC the flexibility to use multiple or existing distribution channels to support efficient operations. This would change the nature of our warehouse and distribution system and logistics to move the liquor throughout the state to many more locations.
So, Steve, I guess I have a question. The minimum or floor pricing on that, that's to prevent competition to use it as a loss leader?
Yes, absolutely. And as it was the discussion and concern that they didn't want one side to have that advantage.
And the 750 milliliter bottles or the fifth is the to reduce pilferage?
Yes, that was the thought. And it's also an efficiency with our transportation system.
Sir, so your question?
Yes. One of the concerns I've heard since we first talked about this last month is that this model is a guarantee for higher prices. Can you respond to that as a criticism? And in addition to that, do we have any indication that based on the initiative that passed in Washington, the prices have gone down?
Chair Byer and Senator Stark, I don't believe that this is a guarantee. I think it really depends on the amendments that are adopted. Chair Byer has some amendments, too, that aren't going to see a spike in prices as well. I think anytime you open a system up that's been a closed system to more market forces, you certainly have the ability to raise prices, certainly in Oregon. It wasn't intended to do that. I think some of the amendments by other people as part of this bill would build in some price increases. I'd recommend you don't adopt those types of amendments related to this measure. We certainly know that pricing sensitivity is a huge item. The legislature has chosen here in Oregon, though, to continue to rely on distilled spirits taxes to the extent that they're now the second highest distilled spirits taxes in the country. And so the legislature has taken every single portion of that tax money or growth that we have seen in liquor sales and not invested that in Oregon. We are going to see some growth in liquor sales just naturally because of the nature of the business and what we're seeing nationally and internationally. I would encourage, as the OLCC chair, for the legislature as it goes to put its budgets in place to not necessarily take every single bit of that additional revenue from natural growth and spend it elsewhere. We need the legislature to at least take some of that natural growth and invest it in the system regardless of what happens. That's the way that we're not going to see price increases, is if we continue to invest in our own system.
I mean, Mr. Chair, the economic theory is if you allow competition, that would drive prices down. We created a model here that creates a price floor, so you're not going to, so that's not going to happen. And the competition that was opened up in the state of Washington, my understanding is the prices didn't go down.
My understanding, Mr. Chair, Senator Storm, in Washington, the prices didn't go down. They've gone up pretty substantially, and they additionally laid on some additional fees and taxes in the state of Washington, and I think that that was problematic as well for what they did. So prices have gone up as a result of an unbridled competition model within the state of Washington, plus a huge reliance on the tax.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just following up on that, my understanding, it's anecdotal from some discussions with Mr. Marks, is that apparently sales have gone up about 5% in Washington State, but state revenues have not followed, and they're having some trouble with collection.
Mr. Chair, I don't know.
The estimates in the growth of the market that I've heard of, and it's anecdotal, right, is about 5% growth. But I am not sure that I heard that their collections of taxes have gone down, because they did put on some, they had their sales taxes and fees along the way with that new measure.
Sorry.
Endorsement requirements. This is the endorsement requirement for the 10,000 square foot off-premises licensees. Their application would conform with the commission rules. They currently have a license that was subject to pending violations, and the applicant must submit a plan describing a public safety plan, looking how the product will be secured, looking to prevent theft loss, and looking how sales to minors would be prevented within the system. The Oregon products plan would also be a part of the application, how Oregon distillery products would be promoted by the licensee, how it will continue to maintain shelf space previously devoted to the sale of wine, cider, and malt beverages produced in Oregon would also have to be produced. The OLCC can suspend or cancel the endorsement for any violation. There would be grounds for the license suspension, and there's a fee associated with this endorsement, and that would be applied towards the transition costs, capital investments, and ongoing operations costs. But this is a process that is largely dependent on their good standing with the existing license, so they would be then endorsed to sell distilled spirits, provided they provide those two plans. Restaurant bars and full on-premises sales, this would match today's system. They must purchase distilled spirits from our retail sales agent, so we maintain that economic benefit on the retail, our state agent side, or they could buy as they can today from another on-premises licensee.
Steve, let me stop you on that one. One of the concerns that people have raised is that what would stop a bar owner or a restaurant owner from going down to the local Safeway and buying the product and taking it to the shelf themselves rather than using an agent?
The law and our enforcement.
Mr. Chair,
their license if they did that, yeah, you're auditing,
yes,
it?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, in addition, they're going to pay a lower price by buying it from the agent.
Yes.
Today we've built in the 5% discount, so I don't know if bar and restaurant owners would want to be giving up that particular lower price, so that would prevent them from going to the local retail grocery outlet.
So we'd maintain the 5% discounting. Which would also, exactly as our chairman said, prevent that. And then we have what would be an amendment in the Dash 3s that would provide flexibility if for some reason some area lost its access to be able to supply the local bars and full on-premises locations with alcohol if for some reason that occurred. The implementation timeline, it's effective on passage January 1st. We contemplate the issuing of endorsements to all grocers on March 1st, 2015. The endorsement holder could begin to sell distilled spirits to the public. By that date, all of our agent contracts would have to be renegotiated and in order so that they could continue to sell distilled spirits. Those are all based on a compensation system. system, so they need to be changed. Those that weren't changed would then be terminated on that date. And then there's the requirement for the report to the Legislative Assembly on September 1st. That report contains a number of informational items of interest. There would be the number of endorsements, brief description of rules to implement that we use to implement the legislation, data regarding the ability of liquor stores to compete with off-premises sales licenses, data regarding sales prices, descriptions of revenue and impact and the expenses associated with it, the impact on public safety to date, the impact on Oregon distillers, and estimates of the costs and budgetary needs of the system. So with this, we have heard a number of concerns that this platform that we provided you is sought to balance out, but there are concerns within the bill, the level of competition, retailers next to grocery stores and potential loss of income, the lost value of current agent investments, sustainability for rural agent outlets, potential for higher prices and fewer product choices, and maintaining the momentum of our craft distillery industry in Oregon. And so this bill really provides the fulcrum to balance these economic choices, right, for, you know, the idea of achieving customer access, convenience, and moderate pricing, introducing market dynamics into the system, which it does, the retention, and while doing that, being able to, you know, figure out our way to retain the wide selection of products that we have and craft products for statewide distribution, and the consideration of current agent investments. So with that, I'll turn it back over to the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm really happy to be here. I applaud the chair for taking this up. It's not a fun issue to deal with. It's really about good government and delivery of services to the consumers that we have here in Oregon, and maintaining a system here in Oregon that provides a robust opportunity for business growth, including small business growth, from both the distiller standpoint, from the agents, and balancing that against customer access and customer safety. And I would ask you again, as I did at the beginning, you're going to hear testimony from a lot of people. I think the number one question is, one, the foundational question is there an access issue? If you don't believe there's an access issue, whether it be the right locations, number of stores, customer convenience, then, you know, you don't have anything to act on, maybe. But I do believe that there's an access issue, and I think it's out there, and the group voted unanimously that we needed to do something to either invest in our current system or modify the current system. And both of those things are going to take some time and money and direction. You can leave it up to initiatives filed by various groups, or you can take the bull by the horns and take some tough votes and try and look at the system and balance it, and I think do what the right thing is for Oregon, and try and give the OLCC some direction as we wrestle, you know, as we wrestle with this issue. We certainly have the ability to, you know, go out and put more agents out there and try and draw more circles, and you'll continue to hear from us time and time and time again from your constituents and from the people who are here. So I would just encourage you to help give us some direction. We'll provide whatever support we can, and we've appreciated the collaboration with your committee and the House committee in terms of looking at this for Oregon. I don't believe that the measures that are out there as a personal citizen, as chair of the OLCC, are going to do good things long-term for customer access, customer convenience, and variety and selection here in the state of Oregon. But I do believe that the legislature can craft something that's thoughtful, that looks out for the interests of Oregon, and will continue to promote a good system that we've built upon.
Questions?
Thank you.
Rob, Steve, thank you very much. It's a tough charge to say, give me a middle ground piece for people to consider. So, and you did a good job. Thank you.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
All righty. Mr. Romain, you're first.
Good
And I don't know if there's any symbolism in the fact that you're top of the list and nobody else signed up until four lines below you.
I did notice that.
We always enjoy having you, Paul, in front of our committee to talk about liquor matters.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland with the Romaine Group, and I'm here representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. First of all, let me begin by complimenting the chair of the committee here and, frankly, the chair and the director of the Liquor Control Commission. They really have made an effort to bring people together, and they have. They brought everybody together in opposition to this bill. I was even sitting next to one of my normal adversaries, and we were sort of laughing about it back there. But seriously, what they're trying to do, what everybody's trying to do, is a good thing. You should always assess what you have and try and figure out if there's a better way to do it. And we applaud you for doing that. The one thing you shouldn't lose sight of is that you have a really good system right now. You have a very good system in that it controls the product. It gives people access. You have 248 agents out there that sell the product. You get a huge amount of money to the state, and you do very little to get that money, frankly. The taxing system is very easy, and it really promotes the small person, the small distiller in this state. Just by way of example, your product right now, if you took a $10 bottle of vodka that was bought by the state brings it into the warehouse at $10. It's on the shelf to the consumer at about $20.80. It's about 108% markup, right in that range. Of that $10.80 markup, only about $2.40 is, in effect, the cost of the system. That's the cost of wholesaling and retailing. The rest of it, $8.40, is the tax money that you get. Yeah. And you distribute it to all types of programs. And I know Senator Monroe thinks there should be more tax money added to that, but I'll preempt you on your... But other than that, I mean, you get a lot of money from it. The only way that you really lower prices in this state, if you really want to, is lower the amount of money you take from for the state. And you really aren't going to do that, because what we've seen in our polling is that people do not want to take less money from distilled spirits. People think by simply eliminating the Liquor Control Commission from the picture, you will lower the price, and the opposite is actually true. You actually raise the price, because you have a very efficient system out there. You have a small warehouse, you have a limited number of stores, you have an ideal way to purchase the product, and your cost of getting the product to the public in the limited places where it's available is very, very efficient. There are some suggestions about how to price the product or how to get more access to the public, and I've been saying these for a long time. First of all, you should go to online, ability to do online ordering. What that would do, and the system that I envision, is you have a list. You go online, right now you can see everything that's available. If you want a bottle of somebody's scotch, you can buy it. You should be able to go online, buy it with a credit card, and say that you will pick it up at the liquor store that's closest to you in a day or two, whatever it is, and it would be there. You would have face-to-face delivery of the product, so you wouldn't have the danger of minors, and you would have the ability for people to get all types of different products, especially the ones that are not available, just generally, people don't think about when you go online. That's one. Number two is, if you want to assist the agents, you do a sliding compensation program. A lot of the complaints you hear are about agent location. Somebody has a bad location. Well, the reason they have a bad location usually is because they're not making enough to move to a really good location. Give people incentives to move to that good location. Put in something that says, if you are in, we'll classify these as A, B, and C locations. If you're in A location, your compensation is 12%. If you're in a B location, your compensation is 9 or 8% or whatever. Sliding scale based on various factors like how the store looks, things like that.
And finally, one thing which I've never quite understood, you finally allowed distillers to sell product at their own distillery. But you put a dollar limit on what they could sell. After they get to a certain point, they don't sell anymore. That's crazy. Let them sell. They're promoting their product. People will buy it there, but then they're not going to necessarily go back to the distiller to buy it. They're going to go to the liquor store to buy the product. Let them sell. You get a cut of everything they sell. Let them sell more. Increase that. Those are just some things that you can do within the current system that I believe will really assist everybody out there in the access. But access really isn't the huge issue that everybody thinks it is. As the governor said just a few days ago, basically nobody's really complained to him about inability to go get a bottle of booze. And to a large degree, that's the case. You probably hear more about access within the confines of this building than you do anyplace else. Nobody comes up to you and says, my God, I haven't been able to get a bottle of scotch recently. They usually tell you that, you know, they found a new thing or whatever out there. What people are very concerned about is price. And this measure does increase the price. It will increase it. There's no question about it. You have, at least the way it's structured right now, you put a floor, you didn't put a ceiling, things go up. You also have a consignment sale issue, potentially. The feds prohibit consignment sales of distilled spirits or any alcohol, actually. In other words, you can't put it in and the supplier owns this product and basically will take it back if it doesn't sell. But you do with your state system because you own the product. It's your system. What happens if you go to a system that's a hybrid model where you now have state stores where you're flooring it, in other words, consigning it, and other stores where you have to pay for it, you may, and I don't know what the state's role in it is, but you may present yourself with a consignment sale issue. So you have to be careful if you do go to any kind of model like that. What you're being threatened with, basically, and the reason that you're so concerned about this, are some initiatives that we don't think are going to pass. We don't even think they're going to come close to passing. And I'll tell you just some basic things. The current system right now, that $10 bottle that you bought and sold in Oregon for $20.80 with the tax, if you apply the simple markups that are in the bill or the initiatives, all of them, all eight versions, I guess seven now, they withdrew one today. So versions 2 through 8. Basically, they take that $10 bottle, you apply a 71.7% wholesale sales tax. That's what the bill is. It's a tax upon the first sale from a supplier to either a wholesaler or a retailer in Oregon or a warehouse that they control. That's a sales tax. It's based upon the tax that's applied is based upon the price of the product. So you do that. That brings that $10 product up to $17.17. You then add a 75-cent bottle charge, which they have per bottle, which basically means the retailer pays $17.92 for that bottle. If you apply a 25% margin, which a lot of stores, the big stores up in Washington State apply, 25% margin, that bottle that sells today in Oregon for $20.80 will sell for $23.89. It's an automatic price increase of about 15%. Plus, the amount that goes to the state is less. And that's normal for a system like that. And that example does not include a wholesaler. That's assuming the product is shipped directly from a distiller directly to a retailer. No wholesaler markup involved. Tax collection. Right now, you have a very simple system. You bought the product. You mark it up. You have the tax. It's really simple to audit. Under the proposed systems that you have out there, it's the product, the person who's liable for the tax is the one who sells it to whoever's in Oregon. That person could be in any place in the U.S. They could possibly be in another country. It could possibly be a shell corporation. You now have to audit every single transaction because the tax is based on the selling price. Not on the amount, it's based on the selling price. So every transaction is different. So you now have to go to Timbuktu to try and find out what tax really should have been paid, and frankly, what was in that price of that product? What did that person really pay for that product? Did they pay
cash for X and then get some benefits or something? What really was in the price? So those things all have to be taken into consideration. So you, as you stated before, your price of tax collection, the cost to the state will go up. We were joking with the AFSCME folks earlier as we were talking about the measure, that they actually should be in favor of the initiatives because the bureaucracy that will be created in the state to do the tax collection will be considerably greater than the number of wholesale or employees in the warehouse. So I might have lost an ally, I don't know. Anyway, what we applaud any effort to look at modernizing the system. But you, again, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You've got a great system. It really works well. You also are not starting from scratch. You have 248 people that have invested a lot in the system and are doing a lot of good work for you. You can't just throw them out. And if you're all of a sudden talking about putting 600 new stores out there, that's going to cut most of those folks out of the business. And if you remember Washington State, the promise in Washington State was the lower prices. You didn't see it. That might have been a function of the taxing structure, and they were trying to develop a taxing structure that nobody could figure out, and I don't think they figured out yet. But that might have caused the prices to go up. It did cause the price to go up. You have a theft problem in Washington State because you now have created a target-rich environment. The incentive to go out and get steal a bottle of wine or a bottle of beer is one thing. The incentive for a kid to steal a bottle of rum or scotch or something, vodka, is considerably different. So you've now created a totally different environment. And that's not, it's not the retailer's fault. They have the stuff there. They're doing their best, we know, to try and protect the product. It's just it's a wonderful thing for kids to go after, and they will. We were all kids once. Some of us might have engaged in an activity like that. I'm not saying. So with that, I will put my testimony at rest and answer any questions. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Paul. Questions? You're off easy.
Oh, good.
Thank you. Mary Botkin. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Mary Botkin with AFSCME, and no, we're not supporting the measure to expand our membership base. I want to say that we're actually not vehemently opposed to this measure because we think that the chair, the new chair, and the new director have made an honest attempt at trying to figure out a way to expand distribution to an access for consumers and at the same time sort of protect what we currently have in place. Having said that, let me just say that we have to quit talking about privatizing OLCC in Oregon. We privatized our system to look like Washington 20-some years ago when we abolished green front stores that some of us remember and went to liquor agents and we sort of cleaned up the appearance of the stores and we changed the way we do business so that now we have, 200 some agents who are private business people who operate private businesses who have their own employees. And so that system has already been done. And Washington had never done that. And had they asked us, the best way to fight the ballot measure, the way we would have recommended would be to do what we had already done, which was to, change the way they distribute liquor. They didn't ask us, we didn't offer. So, that is the way it is. But let me just say that I feel pretty strongly that in deference to Senator Monroe, who I worked for at one time, I'm not worried about the person who wants to buy a bottle of booze on their way to church. I'm worried about the person who wakes up at 3 in the morning and needs a bottle of booze and doesn't have one. Mm. And I'm not sure that's the person I want to have access to a bottle of booze 24/7.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that the system works pretty good. It's got problems, but so does every system. This is a highly regulated product for a reason. And the members that we represent at OLCC take their jobs very seriously. Whether it's somebody who is enforcing liquor laws or making sure that the folks who are selling the product are meeting the laws that are in place and the rules that are in place. You know, we do that with honor and with pride. Are there problems once in a while? Sure. There always are going to be problems when you're trying to manage a system with a product that is potentially dangerous in the wrong hands. We want to provide a product to responsible consumers. That's what you want. That's what we want. This is the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, not the Consumption Commission. And so there's a balance. There's a balance between making sure that responsible consumers have access and can get what they want in a reasonable manner. I don't know that we have a particular problem with grocery stores having access to this product. What we do have a problem with is losing the system in its entirety, because we think the system works pretty well. And we think we have a responsibility to the folks who have been providing the service to the state of Oregon in selling liquor for many years. You know, do you just simply look at those small business people around the state of Oregon and say, sorry, we're going to make more money over here, so we're not going to let you play anymore? That's just not the way Oregon generally does business. And I think that we have a growing craft distillery system and business that is showing innovation. I mean, I have joked with Senator Thompson about my son who delivered bottles to his farm. And as he's driving down this road, he sees bottles hanging from trees. And he's thinking that he's going to go meet with some loony person, because clearly he's got bottles hanging from the trees that make no sense. And he's got a load of bottles. Well, that's how he found out that that's how you grow a pear in a bottle. And, you know, I mean, that's innovative. Who would have thought of that? So, you know, I think there are things that we don't want to get in the way of. And, you know, there are good things that we can do. And I think, you know, we should continue to have conversations about how to expand access. But it ought to be responsible access. It should not just be, you know, random, no holds barred. This is a potentially dangerous product. In the hands of responsible people, it is not. But, you know, we don't hear about the responsible people. We only hear about those that are irresponsible. So with that, you know, we're willing to work with our agency to find different and innovative ways to expand the distribution system. We're willing to work with grocers in a way that allows them some access to the product. But everybody, 24/7, no holds barred, that's not a system we're in favor of. And we think we have a responsibility to the agents who've been doing business honestly and, you know, legitimately for a long time. So with that, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Questions? Comments? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Hacienda Squires.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hacienda Squires on behalf of Hood River Distillers. Everyone's been very kind and nice about the chair and the commission and the new direction that they're headed in trying to find efficiencies in the existing system and try to respond to marketplace changes. We appreciate and respect what they are trying to do, but do not support this legislation. Hood River is one of the larger distillers in the state, and I believe you have a letter from the Oregon Distillers Guild in your record. We belong to that guild, and I can just say from our perspective, privatization is not good for small business. It definitely wasn't good for our business in Washington State. We got absolutely killed in that state, crushed. I cannot express that to you more clearly. We are big, and we sell value-priced products, and we sell little niche products. They probably don't cost as much as some of the big boy products that you can find on the very top shelf for $300 that might get into the marketplace in a privatized system. We sell Pendleton whiskey and value-priced products, and we got Pendleton whiskey, and we started by selling value-priced products and selling something that people liked, and we grew, and we grew, and we grew. Just bought a Clear Creek Distillery a couple weeks ago, and we're growing, and we're big, and we do provide jobs in Hood River, and we contribute to this economy, and we feel like we do it in a responsible manner, and some of those little guys would probably like to be like HRD one day, and if you privatize this system and don't provide them with the opportunity to be on the shelf and to allow the big box stores to control the state and its alcohol distribution system, that's what will happen. So we appreciate the effort that's gone into this, but it's a real conundrum. You've got 10,000 square feet stores, and we can't get into them, and if you allow Flat Pantry and all the other smaller stores the same access, then you've got increased access and liquor agents that are upset with you that they're now competing with the smaller stores. So we think that there will be a healthy debate that will occur in November, and we'll see exactly if voters are willing to accept increased prices and increased outlets and support big business over small business, and we'll let the chips fall where they may. But I'd be happy to answer any questions.
One question I have, as soon as I think, one of the things that the OLCC tried to do was ensure people like Hood River would get into it by keeping the state in the wholesale business and assuring that Hood River would do that, as opposed to the open system that you're describing in Washington State, where you encounter immense pressures, one, whether a Costco or someone like that would even care to carry your product, and if they did, what kind of terms they would want from you to make it financially possible. We tried to contrast that and make sure that Oregon products would stay on the shelves and everybody would have that. So I'm not quite sure where your criticism of the proposal is focused on.
Well, in 10,000 square, in large stores, they're able to dictate that. So, for instance, what the way they're able to lure you in, I'll just tell you what my client has told me. So what Costco will do is say, oh, we'll carry your product. We'll carry your product now, and then we'll lure you in, and we'll bring you into the store, and then all of a sudden you do it under our terms in this way, and we're all of a sudden selling it under a private label or doing something that doesn't really maintain your autonomy, and that's the way that it works.
Yeah, you're describing the Washington model. That's why we tried to keep OLCC as the inventory, in control of the inventory, so that could not happen.
Okay, any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Hasina. Mr. Gilliam. Hi, Joe.
Hello there, Mr. Chair. Did you watch my back as I sit down?
I've got your back covered. I'll let you know when the arrows are coming.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Gilliam. I represent the Northwest Grocery Association. Speaking to the bill today, I think there's one thing that came out of the task force. OLCC did a great job getting people together, pulling folks together. Very tough issue. We've been on this issue for a long time. There was one agreement in the entire task force, and that was that the current retail system, it will implode in a short period of time, in the short term, just because of the pressure on low compensation to the agent system, and investment in it, it will not survive, and you will not be serving customers appropriately. Everybody agrees that. You can't keep going. So you're in a conundrum in your system. If you just sit like you have for, 30 years, 16 active ones saying no to changing the system in the last 8 terms in the legislature, looking at reinvestment in the system, your system's going to implode on you anyway, and you won't have a choice. So that's why we're out here on this issue. This bill itself is a problematic bill. It's very difficult in this environment to try to pull all the interests together. OLCC did a nice job. They did 2 things that came out of the process. They recognized that the current retail delivery system is broken. And it also recognized, as a matter of public policy, that consumers should be able to access distilled spirits in the grocery store right next to other alcoholic beverages. The mystery of that is gone. OLCC, as a matter of policy, has advocated for beer and wine to be in the liquor store. By this bill, they're saying that distilled spirits has a place in the grocery store. And I think that's a huge step in a long-term argument that there's something mysterious about having those 2 products, these 3 products next to each other. There's really no mystery to it at all. The problem with this bill itself, it offers increased access, but it ignores all efficiencies of the retail system. It tries to maintain a very old and archaic wholesale model that has not been reinvested in. This is not necessarily the fault of the OLCC. I hate to lay it at your feet, but I'm laying it at the feet of the legislature because there's been no reinvestment, and the wholesale delivery system is now past its prime. You're trying to fix a dinosaur. The way this is set up will increase prices, guaranteed. There's no other way to do it because you've squeezed the compensation for these agents down so low, there's no room to move. When you open that up, and if you don't make any other changes, then all they can do is increase the price. The other options you have are to cut your take or to find efficiencies. There's no magic here. There's no new economics here. It's everything you learned in Economics 101. There's only one way to skin this cat. It does not adequately help the craft distillers, this bill. And the way it helps craft distillers is by providing shelf space is probably a violation of the Commerce Clause because you're only offering it to Oregon distillers based on their location. And you really can't do that. You can't come in and say, you get the shelf space, but you distiller from Washington don't get shelf space, guaranteed. So you got some problems in there in the writing of the bill that I would draw your attention to. On the back of your testimony there, I just did a quick chart for you to understand hydraulics here. When you look at this bill or any initiative that we put together, you really have to deal with these mechanics. And if you run from these, then you're just running in fear or you're afraid of change or you got an axe to grind. But the numbers are the numbers. The OLCC builds their bottle with manufacturer cost of $7.65 under column B with under current. The overhead's 84 cents. The programs get $5.31 a bottle. You have a surcharge that goes into programs for 50 cents. So your wholesale cost of the bottle is $14.30. Commission is $1.40. Now that's 8.8% of the total of the bottle, the $15.70, is a commission rate of 9.79 on the wholesale cost. If you go to the hybrid model and you don't change anything the state does, and you go down to the blue box and you just set a minimum markup, and what's been tossed around was anything from 15 to 20%, so I took the lower number just to be conservative for you. If you put a 15% minimum markup in there, your bottle price goes to $16.45, or 4.7% increase. In the next column in the red, if you go to the hybrid model and you say, okay, we want to be price neutral, the only way to get there is you get rid of your temporary surcharge at 50 cents a bottle and cut your cut back to $5.16 a bottle. Now, it's 11% drop in revenue on your side of the ledger. I don't want to go count the votes for that one. That's not going to happen. In a private model that everybody's kind of trashing right now because they're fear of change, is the only way you get it, you got to execute and take advantage of the efficiencies that are already there. Our trucks, our warehouses, already on the road, our people, That's the benefit. You get into the efficiencies. If you cut overhead, if you cut the cost of goods landed by just 3%, and you count in the cost of the overhead at the OCC that's doing the warehouse, you take all that out, you can get back to $15.70 with a 15% retail markup. My guys don't take 25% in Washington. I know Paul likes to say that, but we don't get 25 points. We get 15 to 17 points. That's it. Total. There's nothing in a Costco score. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you buy a boat or a bottle of vodka. There's nothing in a Costco store over 14% markup. That's a stated policy. There's nothing in the store you can buy. Not a muffin or anything. That's it. So 25 points is way out of range. So you have to play with these hydraulics to get to there. The way this bill is written, and there's a lot of other things I don't like about the bill, but the way it's written is you're not going to get there without about a 5% increase minimum on the cost of the bottle. Mr. Chair, any questions?
Thank you, Joe. I think you just made the arguments that were made in Washington in the last election cycle, but the result was a little different.
Well, the model is much different in Washington than what's been proposed here or what's been proposed in any initiative. In Washington, there is a layered license fee. So you have wholesale cost. Then they pay the state 10%. Retail gets it at that price. They put their markup on that. Then they have to pay 17% to the state. So it's almost like compounding interest, right? Everybody's on top of the fees. When you have a layered system like that and high taxes already in the state of Washington, the state, and not anecdotally, the state actually has got more revenue than was predicted. The 17 and 10% were probably too high a guess, and there was no modifier in there to correct that. It just has left that place. There's high markup at the wholesale markup range that jumps to 10%, that jumps the retail markup, that jumps to 17%. So that's where the higher prices have come from. Now, in the beginning, when 1183 passed, prices spiked 18%, and then they fall into a 7% increase in comparative numbers. Now, that continues to go down because the competition in the marketplace is driving those prices down. So you're seeing a great reduction in price. You'll eventually see it probably break about even. But the state has been making a lot of money because overshot at 17, and 10 and 17 was too much. And it was overshot. It was just, you know, you're trying to guess on the economics and you missed it. We missed it high.
Questions? Thank you, Joe.
You're very welcome.
Okay, Mr. Jarman. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dan Jarman representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. The Oregon Wine Growers Association has not taken a position on this specific legislation, but I just wanted to take a moment to give some perspective from the wine industry on this bill and this issue in general. First of all, I just want to say this committee has been very supportive of the wine industry over the years. I look across the row here, and I think every single one of you has been a champion of the industry over the years, and I think all but maybe one of you has wineries in your districts. So we want to thank you for the support from this committee and from the legislature to help expand our wine industry in the state. We've made some great strides, and we hope to continue to do that. With that said, the initiatives in front of the voters in the fall, and this bill in particular, is very worrisome to the wine industry, and we just need to look north to Washington State with some perspective. Once that initiative passed, the data shows that wine as a whole lost about 25 to 30% of its shelf space in grocery stores, with the distilled spirits mostly displacing that wine. And that is going to be a real, real concern to this industry, especially an industry that has mostly small wineries. So the big guys will probably do fine if there was an effort to bring distilled spirits into the grocery stores, but the small wineries, it would be devastating to them. Mostly the small ones in the state of Oregon, as you know, this is a boutique wine industry. 75% of the wineries in the state, of the 545, make about 5,000 cases or less per year. And that's mom and pop businesses, quite frankly. And they need the shelf space in the Oregon stores to be able to sell their product. So we are very concerned about the future. We are very appreciative of you, Chair Beyer, and the OLCC for agreeing to some important provisions in this bill that allow for the plans that the grocers would have to submit on how they would promote Oregon products, in particular wine products. We think that's a very good piece for this legislation. Don't know if that gets us to where we need to be to still be able to sell our product adequately in this state. So we may need other resources to be able to promote Oregon wines. We may need additional resources to be able to educate the grocers on promoting Oregon wines. So we look forward to having that conversation with the committee as this issue continues to move forward over the next year or so. The final thing I'd say, really there hasn't been much discussion on this side of the building about what a new system could look like, but there has been some talk about if there were going to be distilled spirits in grocery stores, maybe sequestering those with the rest of the products. We really hope that we don't look at sequestering wine along with distilled spirits in stores, in the store, within the store. We think that's a real problem. Wine really belongs with food. That's the way we view the product promotion. So if there's any thought of that, we hope you think differently. So just wanted to get a little marker out there for you. So thank you for the time today. Happy to answer any questions.
Not all alcohol is equal, huh?
That's right.
Seems like I remember years ago a discussion about these flavored drinks, mm-hmm. some made with barley, some with some other things. Yeah. Questions? Thanks, Dan.
Thank you very much.
All right. Chris Fleck.
Fick.
Sorry, Chris.
No problem. Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, other members of the committee. For the record, Chris Fick with the League of Oregon Cities. As others have done, I want to commend the chair and OLCC for bringing this issue to the table before the legislature, where all the interest groups can weigh in on what we think is a decent stab at a modernization bill. The League particularly appreciates OLCC's principles surrounding preserving state-shared revenues with cities. Last biennial, cities received $120 million in state-shared revenues. That's a critical source of public safety funding for our members. In lieu of the amendments that are being drafted and the current uncertainty around this proposal, our board has not officially taken a position on the bill before you, but we hope to do so as it continues to take shape. But what our board did do 2 years ago in the wake of the Washington privatization effort was adopt some principles that we've posted on OLIS. The two that might be of most interest are the preservation of state shared revenues. We did a study with the Association of Oregon Counties in 2011 using some data from Eco Northwest and found that there's a significant gap between the costs that cities and counties incur in policing, prosecuting, and preventing alcohol abuse and alcohol-related crimes. And we think that in any modernization effort, we would be well served to try and close that gap. As was pointed out in the hearing last month, right now about 95% of the state shared revenues that accrue to cities are from liquor taxes. So, and now I need to watch my back on this, there may want to be a more equitable distribution so that other alcoholic beverages that have the same effects on people are more fairly taxed to close that gap. The other principle would be around the number of establishments. While 650 would be a significant increase in the number of places where you can buy liquor, we do think that it is better than a smaller square footage footprint whereby in urban areas you would see liquor available on every corner store and could have more significant public safety concerns for our members. So those principles are available online. Again, thank you for bringing this issue before us where we can weigh in.
Any questions? Thank you. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Singh. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. I want to thank you for engaging your local government partners in this discussion and through the work group, AOC and the Sheriff's Association. Appreciate being at the table with the industry leaders, so thank you to the OLCC leadership for bringing everyone to the table. From the county's standpoint, we expressed a number of concerns during the work group process, primarily in public safety, as some of the concerns have already been mentioned. Expanding access to hard liquor could have negative consequences in regards to theft and substance abuse and other behavior and mental health issues. Youth access to alcohol would increase, and youth access to hard alcohol could be potentially deadly. Some of you know I serve as a Reserve Portland police officer. I actually work the entertainment district on Friday, Saturday nights. That's Old Town, downtown. So I see firsthand a few times a month what underage drinking and binge drinking can do. It's generally not a pretty sight. A lot of dangerous behaviors come with that. If any ballot measure or bill were to move forward, we hope that you keep in mind that it's our sheriff deputies and other local law enforcement that will have to take up additional workload for any consequences that come with expansion. Separate from OLCC revenue, we've had an issue that we've worked on for a couple years. A few years ago, district attorney's offices received nearly $1 million each biennium for liquor enforcement. That money was from court fines and fees on liquor-related violations and crimes, and that money was sent to our DA's offices for deputy DAs to fund liquor enforcement, DUI training and equipment. There was a bill that I think inadvertently took that money away, and despite our asking for that money back, we have yet to receive that back. So this is an example of local public safety dollars that have been lost at the local level. Counties are facing tough financial times, as you know. Just a few examples. Josephine County, up until a couple weeks ago, the sheriff himself was the only patrol deputy that was available. Curry and Columbia counties are ready to close their jail. These aren't stories that are new to you. So we're looking for options and the ability to keep funding, which is necessary for public safety and human services and mental health needs at the local level. So if there's any additional chance of additional revenue, please keep your local government partners in mind. Thank you for keeping us engaged and for your work and the agency's work on this bill.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, Patrick. Steve Brown. Welcome.
Marshall.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thank you for having this meeting. From the record, my name's Steve Brown. I'm an agent at the Salem Battle Creek store. That's 1198 here in town. If you ever get a chance to go down there, we just remodeled the store and put $160,000 into it.
Wonderful store. Did a nice job.
And I'm also an agent at the Lincoln City store, Lincoln City North, which, again, we are believers in keeping our stores modern and accessible for customers of Oregon. I want to thank the chair and Rob for having the discussion. I was on the Retail Innovations Committee, the group, that had the difficult discussions on whether or not Oregon is doing the right thing today for retailing of distilled spirits. There were several things that were brought up in committee that I feel that this bill does not address. For that reason, I cannot support it. The first thing that I would like to make comment to this committee is that private individuals out there, independent business people, take all the responsibility for selling distilled spirits in the state of Oregon. We have current, at today's rate, an investment of $18.3 million that provides $1 billion of revenue for the state of Oregon, or in gross sales, I should say, about $400 million. If we were to make the decision to change the way that we do business in the state of Oregon, the first thing that I would ask is that the legislature looks at replacing agents' investment. As any business, the last thing that we would hate to see in private sector is competition opening up next to us. It's a good thing for some people, and some people it is not good. I believe the way that the bill is written, that you will have at least 50% of the people who have invested their own monies out there would go out of business. Does that mean that the system doesn't need to change? I believe, as Joe Gilliam had testified, that if we don't do something, the system will implode on itself. It's been a concern the 10 years that I've been an agent. So how do we get there and not only modernize the system, but provide future revenue for this legislature to look out 5 and 10 years and know that they have secured funding for the important programs out there? Rob asked us to address the access issue. I would have to say, is it a perception, first of all, or is it a reality? I believe the current system is a good system. I believe that it's finally time for this legislature to invest in our system. Agents haven't received an increase in agent compensation in 10 years. We've relied on growth to keep our doors open. For some areas, that's worked, and for some business people who have chosen to expand the way that they do business, it's worked for them. But I have to tell you, as a retailer of 35 years, that it's not working for everybody, and that's why the system is in jeopardy. Investing in the system, the current system, means the legislature needs to allocate dollars some way, somehow, back to the agency. I believe perception of access could be eliminated or at least reduced by giving agents more money to provide living wages for their employees and to expand and modernize their stores. I believe we can look at density issues at that time. One thing that was brought out of committee was that Oregon, the density per liquor store, I think it was one in 15 to 16,000 residents, whereas if you look at a national average, it ends up being about 5 to 6,000. So the question was asked in committee, can we add more agencies? The problem is, when you add more agencies or competition next to you, you know it's going to decrease your volume. If we're still making 8.8% and we're not making it today, having troubles paying our bills and paying living wages, what makes you think that we can afford to keep our doors open if we increase the density? So it really goes back to investing in your system. Retailers across the country look at a remodel rate, or I would say putting monies back into their investment, at about 8 to 10 years. That means that retailers out there, the Fred Meyers, the Nordstrom's, you know, the Kmart's, they reinvest, which means modernize their store, totally remodel their stores on a scheduled program of 8 to 10 years. I think it's time that this legislature looks at that 8 to 10 year window and say, we're going to provide the agents money to go through and remodel the way their stores look. I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. I'm Marshall Koba with the Associated Liquor Stores of Oregon. I think Steve did a great job of pointing out some of the issues. I'm going to be the historian here, and I've done this many, many times over the last several years. But, you know, we've been very supportive of modernization. Actually, we've used that word in our OLCC testimony probably for the last decade. We support modernization. We support investment in the stores, and we think that we've got a system that works well. It's a great revenue producer. It's got low costs, but unfortunately, I think one of the factors and the reasons that it has low costs is because that's taken out of the agent's back. And anybody who's looked at this issue, and I can go back here, I've got a number of documents, and I've got a big fat three-ring binder, the Agent Comp Task Force. But if we go back here, the Oregon Liquor Agent Fair Compensation Study, 1998. Talks about paying agents more. Customer service survey from, this is an OLCC document from the year 2000. Interesting conclusion or recommendations. One, encourage stores to stay open later, especially on weekends. Make changes, too, so that the stores offer the type of retail experience women enjoy. I thought that was an interesting 2000 change of the millennium. And then there's others, but
gotta put those pianos in.
There you go. A retail business plan from as we changed the year 2000, better stores, better locations, better parking, better access, better retail experience. That's what that one suggested. 2003, we had the city, Mayor Drake, Governor Kitzhaber, this was the Oregon Alcohol Beverage Industry Task Force appointed by Governor Kitzhaber to examine contemporary issues related to the OLCC. There, they came back and said, pay agents more. In 2007, we spent $434,000 on an agent compensation study. Never been implemented. It said pay agents more. So we've got plenty. I don't know where this bill goes. If it ends up being a study, we've studied the agent compensation part pretty significantly. And there's a long track record here. And I think, you know, if you listen to a lot of the comments here today, we're not that far away from an outstanding system, I believe. I think that the investment that we're talking about is not huge money, and it's not significant at all. But as Mr. Gilliam said, you know, if the system implodes, if no investment is made, and I think we agree with that very, very strongly, we support investment. And then what do you get? What's the legislature get and the consumer get? You get better stores, better locations, better access, open longer hours, more stores will open on the weekends, creating more revenue, and creating the access that we've sat around the table talking about here for the last several months. And if you go back to the fall of 2013, and I think one of the things that got us here, there was a motion made by the commission, and maybe you all know about this, but I want to share it with you. The motion was, and this passed, I think there were four votes at the time, 4-0, I moved to authorize the chair of the commission, Mr. Patridge, to request that the legislature take action to either invest in the current system of distribution and sale of distilled spirits or modify the system. This was pre-draft Senate Bill 1559. Now, if this bill comes out or not, again, the commission is on record. They've been on record over the past several years of supporting investment in the system, and we think the time is now to invest in the system. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions, Marshall? Senator Edwards.
The time is late, so I'll keep it really brief. But do we have any, besides agent compensation, are there any loan programs or anything like that that the commission or anybody administers to agents in order to reduce the cost of investing in store upgrades and stuff?
No, there is not.
Okay.
Other questions? Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you.
And that is a very nice store. I did visit it after we spoke.
Oh, thank you.
Steve has one. Besides the liquor store, he has a, I don't know what you'd call it, a growler fill.
It's the really fridge very, at Liquor
very
Outlet
well done.
Now.
Very
yeah.
well done.
800 to 1,000 different microbrews and 24 taps for growler fills, including hard ciders, and we'll have an Oregon wine on tap this spring.
Much to be proud of. Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else? That's all I have on my list. Going once? Twice?
It's part of your
come on down.
Right now.
I've been watching, so I think I
can see how it's done. I'm not a retailer or representative of the alcohol industry or the grocers. I'm just a concerned citizen who...
Could I get you to put your name on the...
My name is Francisco Holdman, and I just believe that expanding alcohol locations to over 650 more locations is dangerous. Putting it in grocery stores normalizes alcohol, so that when you're taking our children there, they just think that that's a, you know, an everyday thing. I believe that alcohol should stay in the retailers, so that you know, when you're 21, you can go there. It's retailers are aware of people who are outside of their stores, so that teenagers can't talk, you know, they can see teenagers talking and trying to get people to buy them alcohol, whereas in a large grocery store, that would be harder because the parking lot, they can go ask people. And basically, I believe that the statesmen that set up this system some 80 years ago, they had the foresight, they believed that alcohol was dangerous. And while Mr. McCormick said that alcohol, the government should not be in the business of distributing or selling alcohol, I believe that the government is in the business of keeping its citizens safe. From the Declaration of Independence, where we said safety and happiness should be principles of our foundation, to the OLCC's mission statement, where they say that their mission is for the responsible use of alcoholic beverages. And I just feel that an expansion of that would be irresponsible on so many levels. Just allowing youngsters access to do you know, how they used to do beer runs, now they'll do, you know, gallon runs. You've seen in Washington, they have videos of flash mobs of kids just running in and running out with alcohol. And I think it's something that we really need to be mindful of. I mean, I've heard about the revenue in the business, and that's important, but there's also the human factor. Alcohol is a substance that needs to be regulated and controlled, because there's a lot of damage and lives destroyed behind it, and we can't just expand it for the grocers, you know, economic desire. And like I said, it's the first time I've ever spoken, and I'm kind of nervous, but that's really important. And just because they put an initiative, they want to push an initiative out there, it doesn't mean they'll get enough signatures to get it on the ballot. It doesn't mean that it will pass. So I think that the people of Oregon, especially after seeing what happened in Washington, will oppose this initiative and the expansion of alcohol. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate you taking time to come down.
Thank you.
Now again, anybody else? Seeing none?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, we have on record a letter. I'm the Senate representative to the Commission on Black Affairs. We have on record a letter in opposition from the Commission on Black Affairs. I was there when they took the vote. It was unanimous.
Okay. Was there any others that I missed?
We also, Mr. Chair, received letters for the record from an Oregon resident and a liquor store owner from Eastern Oregon, D. Myers, and also from, I believe, Ms. Squires mentioned Ted Pappas' testimony on behalf of the Distillers Guild.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing on that. Is there anything else for the good of the order? We are adjourned.